Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Well, of course it's The Advertising Show. What better way or time to spend just a few minutes with us, more like about 40 minutes or so, with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe here at theadvertisingshow.com. Glad you're here with us. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. We have, as always, Jeremy Kent, our European correspondent. He's coming up shortly here. But the show today is all about a guy named Jack Neff. Jack is editor-at-large at Advertising Age, where he covers packaged goods marketers, Walmart, and market research. He's based out of Cincinnati, and we're going to get to talk to Jack here in just a few minutes and find out what's cooking, so to speak, on that end as we move through the advertising show. Speaking of things that you can cook with, and Brad, you tell me, I as a kid, I always enjoyed seeing the Kraft commercials on television. You know, we're talking 1960s and such. They were just so feel-good and warm, and they kind of came back with that. But here's the thing I've got with this whole thing. Kraft is exercising, and this is out of Advertising Age, what they're calling a seismic shift. And basically, what they're explaining is why it is shaking up its shops. And listen to this. You've got all the different Kraft brands, Brad, like Milka, which used to be Global Creative of Ogilvy and Mather. They did that. Now it's MDC Partners, Crispin Porter, Boguspe. The same thing that goes with Kraft Mac and Cheese. It's headed from Interpublic, Draft FCB to Crispin Porter. Same thing with Jell-O. Planters is going to Omnicom. Let's see. Cool Whip goes to Interpublic Group Martin Agency, and so on and so forth. What do you think about that? Is that, do you think that's a, you think that's a statement of how these agencies performed, or do you think it's just a doggone good move on Kraft's part?
Well, you know, and our guest today out of Cincinnati, home base of Procter & Gamble for years, most brand managers, most companies that had multiple brands would assign those brands to individual agencies because they wanted individual effort made as opposed to consolidating for financial reasons and putting several brands under one roof, which also was a trend for a while back. So, you know, it's just a philosophy. You know, as far as the shakeup,
Not that big of a deal then.
Well, it depends on what kind of it depends on what kind of time frame they're giving each particular agency to perform. There was a time not so long ago, which we've talked about on the show over the past decade, that Burger King had a new agency about once every year and a half.
And then they locked onto Crispin Porter, yeah.
Yeah. Crispin Porter was able to handle the account for a period of time. I think they still have the account. Pretty sure they do. And they've got some kind of record going with BK. So, you know, some are fickle accounts that are difficult to maintain a loyal relationship with an agency. Others just look for change for the sake of change to shake things up. Yeah. So I really can't comment unless I were sitting in the boardroom.
And part of that $1.7.5 million of business would be nice to get. Kraft says, celebrating a nearly 100-year-old brand, it's evolving to stay ahead of the rest of the packaged goods pack. Very smart on their part. More than ever, we're focusing on contemporizing and making our iconic brands more relevant to today's consumers. That's according to Dana Anderson, who is a senior VP Marketing and Strategy Communications. So an interesting twist for Kraft. Hey, by the way, I wanted to mention to the folks that listen to the show, and you probably heard us talk about Audible.com. It's a opportunity sponsorship for here at the Advertising Show for us, and we are happy to be part of that endeavor as well. And Brad, there's a kind of a cool deal going now. I guess if you act, if one of those things, act now, call before midnight. What is that all about?
Yeah, it is an act now opportunity, and according to our records here, many are taking advantage of this opportunity exclusive for the Advertising Show listeners. If you're listening to the show on an iPod or an MP3 player, chances are you are, you can download audiobooks as well, and you can do that for free for a short period of time by simply going to audiblepodcast.com/adshow and get a free 14-day trial and a free audiobook download. Audible.com is a great place to go for many books that you see out on the shelves, but it's all audio. It's available for your MP3 player, and you can simply go to audible.com and check out their selection. But when you log on for the special promotion, you've got to go to audiblepodcast.com/adshow and sign up for your free 14-day trial and get your free audiobook download. It's as simple as that, Ray.
And no coffee mugs or T-shirts with this offer, just something you can really use. We like that, too, as well. Jack Neff is going to be joining us shortly. Here, editor-at-large, Advertising Age, as we told you, covering packaged goods marketers. And he is based near Cincinnati, where he's been since 85. What a great city to land in. He has covered the P&G and packaged goods marketing in various capacities for Trade and Business Pub since 90 and since 94 with Advertising Age. Jack has also worked in corporate communications for the E.W. Scripps Company, written business books, columns for graphic designers, woodworkers, and writers, co-written the Insider's Guide to Greater Cincinnati, like that, covered the bankruptcy of Federated Department Stores, the precursor to Macy's for the Atlanta Constitution. He's also covered legal and regulatory issues for the Bureau of National Affairs and also for Bloomberg. And so we're going to talk to Jack here in just a few moments. Brad, what do you have there?
Well, it seems like everybody's weighing in on technology these days, and leave it to Pope Benedict the 16th, who is warning that the internet does not make people more humane, but instead, it's increasing a sense of solitude and disorientation among a numbed group of young people. Oh. Well, I don't think you need to be Pope to know that, right?
Yeah, I guess not. It's funny that the Pope would even leverage commentary on that.
They've got Facebook, and I don't know if he tweets. I'm trying to be respectful here. The technology.
Yeah, you better be. You get struck by lightning, Bell.
Yeah, well, it's raining right now. The technology, he says, is creating an educational emergency. Well, we see cyberbullying going on, and I don't know what to say. I don't know. Is it the technology? Is it the people behind, what they're inputting there? So
no, nothing has changed. There's always been bullying. It just wasn't called cyberbullying. It's always been here, always will be here, and we need to be able to learn how to deal best with it. Jeremy Kent was never cyberbullied. He's 6'12". No, I'm joking. He's Jeremy Kent of the Advertising Show.
Hello, and it's a warm welcome to London and the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. This week, brands insure against celebrity disgrace, Europe warns on behaviourally targeted ads, and conflicting predictions for Christmas shopping. Brands are increasingly turning to insurance to protect them from wayward celebrity behaviour. So-called disgrace cover protects a brand against negative publicity generated by sponsored celebrities that endorse the brand. Cover has become more popular since the revelations about Tiger Woods' private life and the allegations levelled at England soccer star Wayne Rooney. Coca-Cola recently shelved plans to include Rooney in its Coke Zero campaign, and Tiger Beer pulled its ads featuring the same disgraced player. It's not known whether insurance covered the cost of those pooled campaigns. Members of the European Parliament have stepped up their opposition to behavioural online advertising, claiming that it breaches consumers' privacy rights. A recent European Union market report criticised advertising techniques whereby advertisers pose as consumers on internet forums or abuse data privacy to target individuals' consumer interests. The MPs are proposing new regulations, including a behavioural advertisement warning and policing by forum moderators. The ad industry argues that consumers would rather be served ads that they are genuinely interested in, and that makes good financial sense for advertisers too. There is confusion in the UK regarding economic recovery on the high street. Value-added tax is a tax levied on the sale of nearly all goods and services in the UK, and in January it rises from 17.5% to 20%. This has led many to believe that this Christmas will be a bumper one for high street retailers as shoppers rush to avoid the tax increase. Many retailers have also stepped up their Christmas advertising campaigns, aiming to surpass 2009's record sales levels. But contrasting media reports claim that retailers are braced for a disappointing Christmas. A recent YouGov poll indicates that just 14% of shoppers plan to spend more than last year, and 25% say they intend to spend less. According to YouGov, shoppers plan to be frugal and resist the temptation to splash out on expensive items. In response, Sony is currently offering to return the VAT on all products bought before Christmas Eve, and they're not alone. Manufacturers of big-ticket items are most likely to be affected by the VAT increase and have responded with a variety of discounts and promotions to combat consumer reticence. This is Jeremy Kent at the European News Desk for The Advertising Show.
Jeremy Kent, always a bright spot here at The Advertising Show with Ray Shillams and Brad Forsyth. And our special guest comes from a place that's near and dear to my heart, and I'll tell you why. You'll get this, Jack, because you live there. It's Clarewood County Airport, and it's a place called Sporty's Pilot Shop in beautiful Batavia, Ohio. Am I right about that, Jack?
Yes, it's Claremont County, but yes, Sporty's is one of our most distinctive businesses.
Certainly. Well, good. Now that we've given our Sporty's folks a plug, I expect a new briefcase, but that's okay. Anyway, Jack, it's a pleasure to have you here on The Advertising Show. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you join a short list of folks from Advertising Age. Rance Crane's been on the show a few times. Former publisher of Ad Age, Scott Donatan, has been on the show several times. And we even had Brian Steinberg on back when he was with Wall Street Journal, right, and then later joined Advertising Age. So welcome aboard, Jack. And, you know, a lot of people, as Ray mentioned, you're editor-at-large at Advertising Age. I think a lot of people may be wondering, what exactly does an editor-at-large for a major trade publication do? So explain what your responsibilities are.
Well, essentially, I cover several beats, and it's not that much different in my particular case from being a reporter, actually. I just got a bump up in title, I guess. But I cover consumer packaged goods, Procter & Gamble and their competitors, primarily Walmart and market research, because both of those parties tend to be big buyers of market research.
In today's world, you don't have to be in New York City. You get to enjoy your hometown of Cincinnati.
That's right. And well, P&G is here, and they've been so kind, Advertising Age, as to allow me to be here as well.
Yeah, you know, you recently wrote an article for Ad Age titled, "Has Green Stopped Giving?" But before we get into discussing the article, set us up here with giving us some insight into how you see, or how you would describe, the typical green consumer today, Jack.
Well, I guess the bottom line description is just somebody who cares enough about the environment that it affects the purchase decisions that they make and other behavior, like recycling. That's probably it in a nutshell. It's probably a skew toward upper-income consumers, skew toward folks who live in college towns, and a skew politically toward more liberal voting patterns. But beyond that, I can't think of too much better way to describe it, I guess.
Yeah, by way of background, let's talk a little bit about the study conducted by GfK Roper that you reference in your article. What can you tell us about the study?
It's something that they do on an ongoing basis, and just look at consumers' attitudes about green and sustainable products and marketing. And it was kind of surprising in a way over the past couple of years that the degree of consumer skepticism has increased quite a bit, on the order of 9 to 10 points, on such subjects as whether they think that green positioned products really are better for the environment, about 9 to 10% more consumers believe that they cost too much, and about 9 to 10% more consumers over that 2-year period believe that they don't perform as well. So that, combined with the fact that the 2010 outlook came after consumers had been exposed to a whole lot more green products, is not a good sign for the industry.
So your subtitle, Seeds of Consumers Revolt Sprouting Against Some Environmentally Friendly Product Lines, was article that was the subtitle, I should say, of the article. Revolt is a pretty strong word there, Jack. Would you really characterize it that way?
Well, I guess when you also add in the context of what happened in the midterm elections, it certainly feels that way. But the reality is that people have also been voting with their pocketbooks, and in some categories where they had tried green products, such as some of the green cleaner launches that hit the market in 2008 or 2009, a substantial portion of people are buying fewer of those products in years two and three. Whether it's revolt or whether it's just a lack of satisfaction, it's certainly happening. There are things such as the bottled water industry, which seemed to have been hurt for at least a couple of years by green sentiment, by people being turned off by the waste involved, frankly, and putting purified water into bottles and shipping it all over the country and the world. Sales were going down for a couple of years, and really just starting this summer, there was a substantial uptick in sales for the first time, really, that has essentially made the past 52 weeks flat, at least, and changed the direction of things there.
You know, you mentioned in your article, throughout the article, that it's really been a shift in consumer attitude, and we're going to talk about some of those details, but I'm curious, in looking at your study or doing research for the article, did you find that the downturn in the economy had any influence on this move away from environmentally friendly products?
It seems like there probably is. I still haven't seen a lot of direct evidence that that's the case. And really, somewhat surprisingly, even in 2009, in the depths of the recession, green products in many categories did pretty well. Now, part of that may have been just momentum from marketers that carried over from prior years. And the fact that marketing plans don't turn on a dime, and so you continued to see a lot of new green-positioned products come out in packaged goods, and you continued to see a lot of new models of hybrid cars hit the market. But probably even beyond packaged goods, what would be most impressive for green products in 2009 would have been hybrid cars that actually had positive growth in 2009 when the rest of the market was in rather dire straits. But then you go into 2010, which, while the economy is still not robust, actually is better than 2009, you start to see some reversal in these things. And so you start to see hybrid car sales go down while the overall automotive sales go up. And again, it's if anything, based on the price, which tends to be higher for hybrid cars, you would have expected it to be the opposite, that 2009 you would have seen sales go down for hybrids because they were pricier. But that wasn't the case. So things like that kind of lead me to believe that the economy hasn't been as big of an influence on green buying patterns as just people's attitudes and their experience with products.
My daughter just recently bought, she looked at a hybrid as well. She finally ended up buying a Volkswagen Jetta, which is an incredibly high mileage car. It's a diesel. It's a clean diesel. And it seems to me that you can say green in other ways than just grabbing a Prius or something like that. She made a great decision. It's a great car and everything. But I thought that was a rather interesting twist on the energy conservation scene as well. We're going to continue our conversation with Jack Neff here. Jack, editor-at-large, Advertising Age, and we'll be back with more with Ray and Brad here at The Advertising Show. Glad you're listening.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
You're like no other babe ever born.
You're fabulous, babe.
You know how to reach out and show your love, babe.
You're fabulous, babe.
You're one of the boys, but you
the advertising show, Ray Schillings, Brad Forsyth, and our special guest out of Cincinnati, actually Batavia, Ohio, a great place, is Jack Neff, who is editor-at-large of Advertising Age. He also wrote the, it says here, co-wrote the Insider's Guide to Greater Cincinnati. There's an incredible ice cream shop in Cincinnati. It starts with a C, maybe? Is it? What is it, Jack?
G, Graters. Yes, excellent stuff.
Graters. Okay, there we go. I was almost right. A little bit far off the alphabet there. But I understand from what they say that's great ice cream. Anyway, on that note, welcome back to the Advertising Show, Jack.
Thanks.
Yeah, something to finish after your Skyline Chili, as we established off the air earlier today.
Oh, would
today.
That be good?
Yeah. While there's been a major shift, as you've so illustrated in your article, in consumer attitudes away from green products, you cite, Jack, in your article that there are actually some product lines that are doing well and spiking in sales in spite of this trend. Talk about some of these companies.
Yeah, it's not uniform, and so you've seen some continued success for Seventh Generation. You've seen continued success this year, really after kind of a difficult 2009 for Method. Whole Foods, for that matter, while it's going up against some really difficult comps in 2009, is showing some pretty strong gains, and so it's not across the board. Certainly.
How do you see places like Trader Joe's growing? The good?
To my knowledge, it continues to do pretty well. I'm not totally certain that Trader Joe's is about green appeal as it is about getting a good deal on good food, mm-hmm. processed food products, largely. And there may be a lesson there in general for at least some of the other brands that are doing better, Method in particular, because while it's certainly got a green appeal, it talks about natural ingredients in its products and avoiding hazardous chemicals. It's also very much about the sensory experience of using the product, both the look and the scent, and the lesson there may be that positioning a product, particularly something that has a very functional appeal, like a cleaning product, simply on its environmental impact may not be enough for people.
Yeah, I think that is the takeaway, because as you mentioned, Seventh Generation, which I think is known more as a green product and has been in, you know, the types of food stores that you would find their product line in, the Whole Foods, et cetera. Whereas Method, yeah, you can see those in your, you know, local box hardware store.
True.
And yet they do by way of both package design as well as just the product itself. I think they don't so much align themselves with the green product line per se. But yet, as you cite, both of those companies are contrarian to the trend, and I was going to ask you what the takeaway is for companies that are maybe looking to some of these successes as how to prevent losing market share in the same product category. But I guess it goes beyond just package design and so forth. Were you able to put your finger on any other takeaways for companies looking to learn from their success?
Well, you do have to have more than just green, and people, as a general rule, are not willing to sacrifice on price or performance. And so products like Purex Natural Elements, which is from a value detergent brand, and when it came out did not have any price premium to the base brand, did fine. Even Seventh Generation, while it does tend to be priced at a premium to comparable products, part of their growth in the past year has likely been from some performance news for the product. They came out with a natural disinfectant product that's basically based on oregano oil, I believe, but where they can claim to kill as many germs as a regular sort of Clorox or Lysol or what have you kind of product. So those are basically things that can allow you to succeed. I mean, as Eric Schwartz of Henkel said about Purex, basically, if you give consumers everything they want and make it green, they're going to be pleased, and you're going to succeed in any market.
And note here too, the oregano does not kill Italian germs. Okay?
that could very well be true. It does smell very good, and it's very confusing because it does seem like something you could actually use as an ingredient in your spaghetti sauce.
And clean your floor. No.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
you know,
Brad.
The question, Ray, I want to save for next segment a question that involves a lot of percentage breakdowns.
Sure.
It's a reference to the study that Jack references during the article, and I'm going to hold that till next segment.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Schillen's Brad Forsyth. We're happy to have Jack Neff with us today. Out of Cincinnati, he's the editor at large of Advertising Age, where Jack covers packaged good marketers, Walmart, and market research. So we'll continue here in just a moment, and happy that you're a part of the ad show too as well. Thanks. We're talking about a lot of great stuff here today with our friend Jack Neff, who is editor-at-large of Advertising Age, where he covers packaged goods marketers, Walmart, and market research, and a whole bunch of more cool stuff, too, as well. Jack, it's a pleasure to have you here at the Advertising Show. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, in your article, you note the study found the share of consumers who think green products are too expensive rose 8 points in 2 years to 61%, while those who believe that they don't work as well jumped 9%, and those who believe they're not even better for the environment in the first place increased 8 points. I found that last statement rather, very interesting. And it made me ask myself that if I'm in the green product line business, I'm dealing with some issues of credibility here with my product, aren't I, Jack?
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to know to what degree, you know, that particular number reflects real skepticism, or how much it just kind of plays off of the other two as a rationalization, where people aren't willing to pay more, and hence they also conclude that it wasn't really any better for the environment anyway, as a way of letting themselves off the hook, perhaps. But even beyond that, the fact is, when you get into the weeds on some of the issues on green products, particularly cleaning products, but really in just about any area, it is very difficult to decide what's better than the next product, and what criteria you're going to use, and even green cleaners may have products that, while they may be naturally derived, are not something that you're going to necessarily want to pour in a glass and drink. So it's a complicated issue. You've seen people like Walmart trying to develop a simple scoring system that they could put on packages to determine, to show consumers how sustainable the product is. And while it's a great idea, the fact is, a couple of years after it's been proposed, it still doesn't exist, because it's really difficult to look at all the factors and come up with a simple answer as to whether one product is better than the other.
You know, you close your article by mentioning some points to ponder, some great advice for those that are looking to make green marketing work for their company. But before we get to that, Jack, who do you envision will become tomorrow's green consumer? Is it a more sophisticated consumer? Is it going to be a larger population than we have today? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it probably will be a larger population than it is today. Certainly both, you know, anecdotally and from research that you see, Gen Y consumers are very much more into sustainability issues than consumers at large, and it's one of those things that probably takes some time to take hold. And as younger consumers get older, have families, become the predominant consumer base for a lot of categories, it probably will change. So I wouldn't interpret the current retreat for some of the product categories as meaning that the whole idea is going to go away.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, you close your article with great advice for marketers, points that they should consider in order to make green marketing work better for their companies. And you start by saying, don't expect much or any sacrifice for consumers. What do you mean by that?
It's that simple. I mean, even something as relatively low sacrifice as having a compostable chip bag that makes a lot of noise, people reject it pretty handily in the United States.
You're talking about SunCrisp, of course.
Sun chips and their compostable bag that's been pulled from the U.S. market. Things like using tap water instead of bottled water, again, something that people have turned away from, particularly this summer, which was a little bit hotter than the last couple of summers have been in parts of the country. Apparently, the urge to pick up a bottle of water was too great for some folks to resist.
Yeah, and you also say don't overstate the case, which goes without saying, of course, and don't have selling points beyond green. Makes sense there. You say green marketing may work best indirectly. Indirectly in what way?
There may just be the broader expectation that companies need to be better, be greener, and operate more sustainably without necessarily making that a central selling proposition of their products. And you see that really across a lot of companies. Really, some of the three of the companies that I cover that have been most active in the area, Unilever, Procter & Gamble, Walmart, all have made major initiatives to improve their sustainability, but by and large, in their general market advertising or in advertising for their individual brands, they don't make that a central selling point. It may be one of those things that's just part of the corporate halo that supports your brand without helping to be the or being the central part of the selling proposition for Tide laundry detergent or Dove body wash.
And your concluding point is consider going green outside the U.S. What countries outside of the United States or North America, for that matter, are embracing green product lines?
Most of Western Europe is a lot more friendly to green products and green marketing propositions and has been than the U.S. Although I would say that GfK apparently in a separate study of the 26 countries around the world did find an increase in environmental skepticism everywhere, including Europe. And it's somewhat outside the direct marketing realm, but the whole climate gate controversy did play a role in that and did have some lasting impact in increasing skepticism on climate change issues. And there appears to be a bit of a movement in this regard globally.
The body shop seems to be one of the very first that I recall that really led that movement. We don't hear much from them anymore, though, at least not in this area.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, again, getting back to the point that you have to market around something other than just being green, it's still about products for them. It's still about the experience of using them. And it seems that L'Oreal, since they acquired the body shop, has struggled a little bit with them, although the last numbers I saw looked pretty good for them, and they were doing okay.
Well, Jack, thanks for keeping us up to date on what's going on from your insider view. It's an insider's guide to packaged goods marketers and all that kind of stuff. It's interesting. Great article, too, and thanks for being a part of the show.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Have fun.
On the Advertising Show, Ray and Brad, we've got more coming your way here in just a moment. Stay right here. Our thanks to Jack Neff, a great guest out of Cincinnati, on consumer goods and such. And it's Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth here at the Advertising Show. Hey, by the way, next week and the week after that, the 12th, and again on the 19th, we've got Alex Ben Block with us. And Alex is kind of doing a, a year-end recap of you know, what's going on in the entertainment industry this year and what's going to go on next year as well. And if you've listened to Alex before, you know that he always gives us a great interview and a lot of really good information as well, including we understand something next week about the Playboy Mansion being for sale, and he was looking to buy it or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Soccer, I'm not a big fan of soccer, but a lot of people are, especially globally. MSL, Major League Soccer, hopes the fans come to its new online fantasy soccer game for kicks and turn into even bigger lovers of the global sport. What they've done, MLS has partnered with Big League Sports, which would be BLS, I guess, are increasing the marketing for the newly launched Pro Soccer Picks, which asks players to select winners or who will score goals in each day's matchups in the run-up to the MSL Cup. The new game is more modest than its previous efforts at traditional fantasy game, typically time-consuming affairs or drafting teams or something like that, so it's a little bit better. The idea behind the process is to build a consumer affinity for the sport that will ultimately translate to a more loyal and financially supportive fan base. I would assume that they're talking specifically about here in the United States, because it doesn't have any problems anywhere else. So.
No.
What the hey. So, interesting thing. Again, watching soccer is very slow. And if you think golf is slow, at least the guys get the ball in the hole 18 times.
and there aren't any fist fights out in the peanut gallery.
Exactly. So, and none of those vuvuzelas or whatever they're called, which sounds like an anatomy part, but that's okay. So anyway, that's soccer. What's your take on soccer? You want to bash it? Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah. You know, we've got NBA basketball over in Europe, so it's only natural that we bring that our way for a trade-off, I suppose.
Or payback. Payback. That's what it is. Yeah, it's
payback. You know, Viacom, according to Reuters, Viacom, Discovery are among two of the hottest in media. The third happens to be Scripps Network Interactive. And according to Wall Street Journal, their stocks are up 25% or more this year. And it should be noted that not one of these companies, Ray, own a broadcast network. Rather, they're all home to cable channels.
Well, Scripps would be HGTV.
Among others, yes.
Yeah, and Scripps, it used to be.
Viacom, of course, has several cable networks out there.
And a great logo ID, Viacom. It's great.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised that you report those numbers. I think that's just very logical, what people want to see and hear. It just makes
a lot
of sense.
And by the way, we're not giving stock tips here, folks. We're just reading the news.
That's absolutely right. Unless you want stock tips. And our tips are buy low,
sell,
and sell high.
And hold. Hold some.
Yeah, right. That's a good place not to go, though, because we've got enough of that stuff. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed the show. And also hope you get a chance to join us next week for Alex Ben Block. And then again, the weekend after that as well. Good content, great shows, and always a great interview with Alex. And you, of course, tell a friend about the advertising show. That's the way things grow, and we hope that you have enjoyed what we've been presenting over the past year, and will continue to present as we roll into 2011. Advertising show is being brought to you by Advertising Age magazine. You can visit them online at adage.com. With Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, be careful this holiday season, okay? The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.